Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jettikin.
Desi, let's start out by thanking our lovely Patreon contributors. They donated over at patreon.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. This week we had Samantha, Eve, Sarah, Denise, Kimberly, Matthew, Jennifer, Gretchen, Carolyn, Julie, Acacia, Patty, Merlin the fish.
Whoa.
That's like when Merlin in the Sword in the Stone Disney movie turns into a fish.
Oh.
I bet that's what this is a reference to.
Oh, okay, maybe.
Very underrated Disney movie,
yeah,
by the
way.
Yeah,
I like that one.
Leslie, Liz, Colleen, Jenna Lee, Jennifer, Courtney, Megan, Shannon, Daniel, Nicole, Brenna, Danielle, Lindsay, Laura, Tanya, Kayla, Emily, and Allie.
Thanks, guys.
You guys are amazing. I hope you have been enjoying the new content we have been putting up on Patreon.
Yeah.
There'll be a new Patreon episode going up right after we finish recording this one.
Yeah. After show.
Yeah. The after show.
We literally do it after the show. It's not a lie.
Yeah. We hit record again after we do this show.
That's right.
Who knows what's going to happen tonight?
We're wild.
Okay, Desi, this is part three of the Cotton Club movie Murder.
Okay.
I texted Desi yesterday and I said, there's going to be a part four.
Dang. This is our longest parts.
This is going to be our longest series.
Yeah.
We have ever done.
Unexpectedly.
Because we have done maybe two or three three-part series.
I think we've done three.
Mommy Dearest.
And the Evelyn Nesbitt.
Three. But you did a part three one time, didn't
did
you?
Did I? I think I did only, I've only done two.
Well, this is Whatever. Four parts. Sorry.
She went for it.
I really went for it this time. But as I told Desi, look, there's a lot of juicy information in this story. It is a wild story and there's a lot of moving parts.
Okay.
And a lot of characters.
We don't want to skimp.
Where we left off. Let me just tell you my sources again. Once again, I've been reading the book Bad Company, Drugs, Hollywood, and the Cotton Club Murder by Steve Wick. There's also a great article from a 1991 edition of Buzz Magazine by Anne Louise Bardak. She's a true crime journalist. I've heard that name before. I've read her before for other episodes.
Yeah. It sounds familiar.
She has written for Vanity Fair.
Okay. Well, they have a ton of great crime writing.
Oh my God. Some of the best. Where we left off last week, Lainey Jacobs's drug runner, the guy named Tally Rogers.
Oh, right.
He,
by the way, I was right about the pirate flag.
I know. Last week on the show, that's also where we left off. Last week on the show, Desi said, Tally Rogers, that sounds like Jolly Rogers. Isn't that a flag? And I said, no, you stupid fucking idiot. The fuck is wrong with you? And then, as usually happens, when one of us calls the other one an idiot, they're like, no, no, they were right.
Look, I love hearing Desi is right. It's always a great feeling. It's like, I was right. A lot of times, I don't even know if I'm right. It's not like I'm like, yes, it is, Rachel. Like, I'm like, well, maybe I am a dumb bitch.
Oh, yeah. I'm always surprised.
It's a distinct possibility that I am wrong.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Anyway, yeah, Tally Rogers.
Tally Rogers is the guy who was kind of recently taken on by Lainey Jacobs to run her drugs from LA to Miami.
And he robbed her.
He robbed her of God knows how many kilos of cocaine and $270,000 in cash. In total, Tally Rogers stole about $1 million.
Whoa.
that's worth a lot of stuff.
So that's a lot of cocaine.
Yeah, he stole a lot of cocaine. And this was a big problem for Lainey because she had to pay back her distributors.
Right.
In Florida. Like, they gave her the cocaine.
On spec.
Yeah, on spec.
Basically.
Basically. Like, she had to come back with the money that she made from it.
Right. So she's out more than just the cost, probably.
Well, like, I think she would get the money that, like, the profit.
Right.
But she has to pay for the cocaine.
But, I mean, she's out of the cost of the cocaine and what she would have earned, too.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, like, she's out, like, it's even worth more than what she's lost, right?
Exactly. So she's assembled a team of goons as well as a private investigator to find him. They haven't had any luck, though. Now, Roy Radin and Robert Evans are moving forward with their idea for a Cotton Club movie, as well as discussing making two other films together. Roy is hoping that they will create their own production company and he will become the most important producer in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
That's his dream. He wants to take over Paramount. He thinks he can be even bigger than Robert Evans at this point. To them, Lainey is just an investor and nothing else.
Right.
They're just using her for her money at this point.
And her cocaine.
Well, yes. Yeah. And her excellent coke. Not only was Lainey being excluded from making any decisions regarding the films, Roy Radin's personal secretary and friend, Jonathan Lawson, believed that Roy was being shafted by Robert Evans.
Ooh.
That he believed that this wouldn't be an equal partnership and that Evans was really just after Roy's money.
I mean, yeah.
He's like, this guy doesn't respect you. Like,
why would he?
Yeah, he's...
I mean, truly, everyone is such a huge narcissist in this. And I feel like Jonathan is like only one kind of seeing it, but he's a little blinded by Roy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, I wouldn't say he's blinded by Roy. I would say he's loyal to a fault.
Right. He's loyal to Roy for sure. Because Roy is also delusional in this situation. God. Like,
and Roy at this point, career wise, like, he's kind of a joke and he's always been a joke. Even though he was very successful with his vaudeville shows.
He wasn't respected, really.
He was not respected among his peers. They thought, oh, he puts these schlocky shows that tour in random areas
and
in the country.
And just happen to make money somehow. But they're not anything to write home about.
Yeah. They're like, this guy is not going to become some revered Hollywood scion.
Yeah. But Robert Evans has something to prove, too, because he had that reverence.
He's on the, like, you know, in a bad place right now because he's coming off of being arrested and convicted for cocaine charges.
Yeah.
He's got to have a comeback, and he's desperate to get financing for these three movies he wants to make, starting with the Cotton Club movie.
Right. And Roy is the only person who would be willing to give him money.
Give him money.
Yeah.
So despite Lainey accusing Roy of collaborating with Tally Rogers to rob her, she came over to visit Roy and Jonathan at the Regency Hotel where they stayed when they were in LA. She brought over her friend, Anna Montenegro. Now, Anna stayed with the guys at the hotel for several days and was very inquisitive about Roy and his life. Jonathan was skeptical of Lainey's friend. Roy, on the other hand, was like, wow, I think Anna has a crush on me.
Now, is Anna spying for Lainey
she wasn't, but that's what Jonathan thought. Because Jonathan's like, you know what? Everyone that Lainey touches is fishy to me.
Right.
He's like, this is a bad situation. Yeah. But Anna was like a nice person, but... I mean, maybe that was her intention at one point, was to fish for information from Roy, but as we'll learn later, wasn't totally the case. Roy, on the other hand, thought, wow, she likes me. Anna later said of Roy to Anne Louise Bardak, quote, he would do 5 grams of coke in a day, then order Chinese food, asking for everything on the menu, and he'd eat it.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that. But Roy does seem to be one of those people who can eat on coke.
the dream, right?
That's crazy.
Is 5 grams of coke a lot? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to do in a day.
Okay. So that's an excessive amount.
That's like, if you're a cocaine addict, you might do that.
Okay.
That's not like people who are just partiers.
Right.
They might, I was always shocked when people would be like, oh, we split a gram 5 ways. But that's like normal people doing coke.
Right. But 5 grams means you're definitely doing it all day long, probably.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. I'm just shocked at the people who were able to A, fall asleep like at the end of the night or even in the wee hours of the morning, and B, eat.
You would have laughed me doing when I did cocaine, because I would literally take the smallest bump. I was like a Gibson girl. Like it, and a little bag of it would last me like weeks. Because I would do such little amounts, and sometimes my friends who did way more
right.
would take some of mine, and it would just be like falling everywhere and like going everywhere. And I was like, that's like a week's worth. I mean, it was literally the smallest amount of cocaine. It was like $50 would last me weeks. Like it was so small. Yeah. I mean, I'm just not addicted to it. I liked a little bit when I felt like I was, you know, getting tired. It was not like a full-time job for me.
Yeah, no, no. Me and Roy Raiden, this was a full-time job.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, it seems like it.
But when the final business agreement between Evans and Raiden was drawn up, Lainey was outwardly furious again. Lainey, of course, would receive zero stake in the Evans-Raiden production company. Jonathan was certain that Anna Montenegro had told Lainey about this agreement. Now, Lainey could have learned this information from Evans himself, as they were fucking.
Oh.
So who knows? I mean, like I said in last week's episode, Anna Montenegro was of the opinion that anyone that Lainey hung out with, she fucked.
Right.
But I don't think she fucked Roy.
No.
Lainey rang the hotel constantly, and Roy dodged her calls. When she would drop by, Jonathan would tell her that Roy wasn't there. So they're like, we got to just get her away, yeah. like take her money and run.
Just keep pushing her away.
Yes. Yeah. Eventually, Roy answered her call and told her that no, she would not have any part in their company, but he would pay her a finder's fee. Lainey demanded $50,000, for which she insisted be paid immediately. Furthering Lainey's ire towards Roy was when he next accused her of selling him bad coke.
Ooh.
He was getting nosebleeds. And she's like, well, maybe you're doing it too fucking much. That's why you have nosebleeds. Like, no, this is bad coke. And she was very offended by that.
Can you get nosebleeds from bad coke?
If there's a lot of speed in it.
Okay. So it is possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, speed, you know when you're snorting meth because it's very sharp.
I see.
it's a sharp feeling.
Okay. You know. No, I don't
Look,
know.
Look, personally, I had no problem with snorting meth. I liked meth. That's neither here nor there. But this was, you know, now they're just taking jabs at each other.
Right.
So then Roy had put a stop on a check that Jonathan had given her for $4,000 because he was writing her checks for coke. Lainey found out that the check was canceled, and she called even more furious, demanding to know what the hell was going on. Roy told her, "Listen, honey, bad coke, bad check."
Ooh.
Lainey had to have this money that Roy owed her for the $4,000 worth of coke. Like we said before, she was already out $1 million.
I like writing a check for cocaine.
What do you even say on that?
Memo.
Okay. That is crazy. So she was already out $1 million worth of coke and cash at the hands of Tally Rogers. And that put her in a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
So she was like, I need this $4,000.
Right.
She had to pay her suppliers. Lainey's boyfriend and business partner, Milan Bellachezes, was insistent that she get to the bottom of this. Alarm bells went off again for Jonathan when Roy's apartment in New York was robbed. Roy thought he was just being paranoid. When he returned to New York, he learned that a filing cabinet had been attempted to be broken into, but nothing was taken. Despite the massive strain on Roy and Lainey's relationship, Robert Evans and Lainey continued to hang out. They went to New York together and then to Miami. At this time, Evans was having second thoughts about working with Roy Raden, as he had just learned about the incident with Melanie Haller that occurred in 1980.
Ooh, right. When I forgot about that.
She was attacked and raped at his mansion.
Yeah.
At the same time, he needed the money badly, and Roy looked like he was going to be able to put up $35 million, which he was getting from the Puerto Rican government. Still, he kind of began to seek other avenues for financing.
Right.
Meanwhile, the Puerto Rican government was really excited about the idea of producing a film with the legendary Robert Evans.
Yeah.
They believed that this movie would create jobs and establish Puerto Rico as a filmmaking hub.
Yeah.
With Lainey now back in the mix, she wanted Roy's 45% stake in the company and for Roy to fuck off.
Ooh.
Lainey appeared at a meeting at Robert Evans's New York townhouse that was to be between the Puerto Rican banker, Jose Alegria, and Roy. Roy and Lainey got into a screaming match right away.
Shit.
Evans agreed that Lainey should get a share of the company. And Roy was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, well, we can, give up some of our shares and just give her a little bit.
Yeah. Just give her a little bit. Like, that seems like she'd be satisfied with something.
She wanted to be more than just money to them. She wanted the status of having this stake in the company.
I'm sure, too, for someone who is in the drug business, you're trying to find legitimate income outlets, too.
That's exactly part of it.
Yeah.
Is they needed this avenue to launder money as well.
Yeah.
Roy was adamant that Lainey not get anything. And even Jose Alegria was like, come on, just give her something.
That's what I think in these situations. Like, why piss people off?
It seems like more hassle than it's worth.
But Roy is such a freak. Like, he doesn't care about pissing people off.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
He kind of revels in it sometimes. Yeah. He's like, I'm doing it my way. I'm fucking fabulous.
I wear a fedora and a cape.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very confident person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not in a good way always.
No.
And yeah, Roy was like, fuck that. She gets nothing. This is my company with Evans. Roy encountered Lainey again a week later on May 6th during another meeting at Robert Evans's house. She was there with her lawyers from Miami. Once again, Roy told Lainey to fuck off. Then he made her cry.
Aww.
So everyone felt very bad for Lainey now.
I bet you she doesn't cry often.
Yeah, and she...
So it's very powerful.
It was a very powerful situation. Everyone, of course, was like, geez, Roy, you made her cry.
That's so awful.
She's like the one woman in the room, and he makes her cry.
And now, I mean, if she's anything like me, he's in for it. If you make me cry, revenge will be mine.
He is in for it. Back at the Mayflower Hotel, Roy told Jonathan that the deal was over. He was done. He told the same to Jose Alegria. Jose was like, come on, I'm sure you can come to an agreement. Roy hated Lainey and refused to work with her. He said that he was willing to quit the production altogether if it meant not having to give a part of his share to Lainey.
Oh, shit.
Like, he was just willing to throw the whole thing in the trash.
It's so funny because he was madly in love with Lainey just a short time ago.
Oh.
Right? Like,
totally. But ultimately, Roy Raden was going to make this work somehow, some way, because he didn't really want to back out. He was desperate to have this. To him, this opportunity was it. This was his ticket into Hollywood, and there was no other way. He could not walk away from it. But he was unwilling to make any sorts of compromises. He wanted it his exact way.
Yeah.
Which is not the best attitude to have working in Hollywood. Because things are not going to go your way.
No.
He still believed that he could have power over Lainey Jacobs to get her to back off. But both Jonathan Lawson and Roy's longtime friend, who was a former soldier for the Genovese crime family, Johnny Stoppelli, this guy, he urged Roy to back out of the deal.
Ooh.
He was like, look, being involved with Lainey Jacobs and Milan Bellicheses is not a good idea. This is bad news. You just need to walk away from this right now and cut your losses.
Damn.
But Roy protested. They don't, you know, he's like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. But okay. This guy literally did know what he was talking about.
It's like his job.
Yeah. Totally. Roy returned to Los Angeles on May 9th. The next day, he got a phone call from Robert Evans. Evans was now offering him $2 million for him to back out of the deal. Jonathan was like, dude, take the money and run. And Roy was not having it. He was like, hell, if he'll pay me $2 million, then he knows he has something good going. They can't make this movie without me.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it.
His pride, he has a lot of pride.
Oh, at this point, yeah. Well, I get his feeling. Like, he knows, like, he's getting Robert Evans at, like, a bargain basement moment. So he'll never have access to what is technically an A-list producer, even if he's at the rock bottom. He has a huge name still.
Right.
So it's like, that's the best he's going to get is, like, a, you know, broke A-lister.
Yeah.
Who's like at the bottom.
Right.
He's not, you don't, it's like better to have that than a D-lister who's still working successfully almost. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
because people want a name attached to something.
They want a name. And like, no matter what, this project is going to get some kind of attention because of Robert Evans. So it is his best opportunity. I can understand why he's holding on to it.
Right.
For sure.
And Robert Evans was, you know, pitching this idea to Francis Ford Coppola.
Right. And Roy, I don't think money drives Roy.
No.
And especially in this case, like maybe it did initially and he got to that point, but now he's looking for something outside of money.
He wants fame and respect.
Yes. Well, even more than that respect, the respect is the big one, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Roy, for, you know, this $2 million buyout from Robert was not going to fly. Later that day, Roy's friend, Demond Wilson, came over to do some coke. Now, Roy spent the day telling Demond all about his plans to become the next president of Paramount Pictures.
Ooh.
If you don't know Demond Wilson, he was the son in Sanford and Son.
Demond is his name?
How do you pronounce it?
I thought it was Desmond.
It's Demond.
Oh, it's Demond. I was wondering if that was the same guy. Yeah, I love that. I love Sanford and Son. One of my favorite sitcoms.
I love Sanford and Son.
Red Fox is the funniest person ever, maybe. Like, he's so funny. And that's such a good sitcom. Like, I don't even really like sitcoms, but I like a few from that back in that era, I guess.
I watched that when I was a kid because it would come on Nick at Night.
Yes.
When that theme song came on.
Best theme song.
The best theme song.
What's his name on the show? Lamont?
I don't remember. I honestly haven't seen the show in like 20 years.
I haven't
years.
Either. My favorite character is Grady, though.
Yeah.
Love Grady.
Yeah. So it's a great show. This made me want to like watch old episodes. I did listen to the theme song this week.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in so long, but it was definitely a fave.
That night, while Roy was out to dinner with Anna, a man named Michael Scalise phoned the Regency Hotel and spoke to Jonathan. He told Jonathan that Roy needed to back out of the deal. This was a warning. To make matters even more complicated, Jose Alegria spoke with Robert Evans and told him that Puerto Rico hoped him and Roy could just settle their differences because the government would prefer that they work together before they forked over this $35 million.
Oh, I see.
They're like, we don't want to change what's already been pitched
right
to us.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm a huge fan of Rocket Money. Not only did they help me find and cancel some of my unwanted subscriptions, in general, they've given me a great picture of my financial status and helped me save money. I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I love the dashboard that shows me this month's spending compared to last month's, so I can clearly see my spending habits. Plus, they'll help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. That's rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene.
Later that week, on a Thursday morning, Lainey called the Regency and spoke to Jonathan. She said that she wanted to set up a dinner meeting with Roy. Roy, who had just woken up from a bender, told Jonathan, "She wants this deal as badly as Evan does. This could be good. Honest to God, this could be good. But I'm not meeting that bitch tonight. Damon's coming over, and I want to have dinner with him. Let's make it for tomorrow." By the time DeMond and Roy had hung out and done some coke, Roy invited DeMond to come over to the meeting the next night. He's like, "Why don't you come to this business meeting?" And DeMond was like, "Yeah, we should go to La Scala."
Like, DeMond's like, "Let me get another free meal."
He was. He literally said, "If you're taking me out to dinner, let's go someplace classy."
Love it.
By the way, La Scala, very famous restaurant in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
They're very famous for their chopped salad.
Is that still open?
Dude, La Scala was having secret
That's
dinners.
That's right. They were having the secret dinners over the pandemic. Yes. They sent out that email, right?
They got in big trouble.
That was funny.
That night, Anna came over to the Regency and begged Roy not to meet up with Lainey for dinner. She had been at the house earlier and said that Lainey had some bad men with her. Roy was like, "No, I have to go to this business meeting." Neither Jonathan nor Anna could convince Roy otherwise. They both were like, "You shouldn't go.
Yeah.
You need to cancel this." But he was going, god damn it. But by this point, Roy was finally feeling a little bit nervous.
Okay.
For the first time, he's getting a little
butterflies.
Yeah. For the first time, he feels like maybe I'm not totally in control of this situation.
Yes.
Or there's people after me.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Jonathan has been alarm bells.
Yeah.
For a very long time now.
But he stifled those concerns.
Of course.
Yeah.
Plus he was doing a lot of cocaine, and that makes you very brave.
Yeah.
So he wasn't terrified like Jonathan was, but he was a little nervous. As a precaution, he arranged for DeMond Wilson to wait outside the Regency Hotel in his car with a gun before Lainey Jacobs picked him up in a limo. Then DeMond would follow them to the restaurant. Then their plan was to pretend that DeMond just happened to be at La Scala, and then they would invite him over to eat.
I love that DeMond is going to go along with this. He's a sitcom actor. I'm sorry.
Right. He's a sitcom actor. He should know that this is going to go horribly wrong.
It's not going to be hijinks.
So DeMond also had some screenplays that he wanted to pitch.
I see.
At this meeting. He's like, "Well, this is a good opportunity for me. I can kill two birds with one stone. I can help Roy."
This is so Hollywood. I could also pitch my screenplays. Any opportunity.
Roy thought, after dinner, he would leave with DeMond. After relaying this plan to Jonathan, Roy stress snorted a bunch of coke for the rest of the day. Roy had no idea about the sinister plot that was unfolding that same day. It was Friday, May 13th, and Lainey's hired goon, Bill Mentzer, phoned a limo service at a place called Lay Express in Bel Air. He wanted to rent a limo, but did not want to rent a driver. Now, this was an unusual ask, because when you rent a limo, a driver comes with it.
Right.
They don't just let you, like, drive a limo around.
I mean, it seems like you'd have to know how to drive a limo, right? They're really long. Like, I can't parallel park this thing.
I feel like, do people still do stretch limos?
I don't even know. Like, I wouldn't even know where or how to do that, or why would I ever even want to do that.
But you know when you're like a kid and like the most fancy thing is a stretch limo?
Yes.
That's like the height of class when you're a kid.
I don't even think they do that at like award shows anymore.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Do people, like, I think people just arrive in town cars.
I think it's like for proms or something. Like, that's the only time I see people still doing
them. But
they
used to do stretch limos.
At like Hollywood events and stuff?
Yeah, didn't they?
I mean, that's my memory, but I don't know if it's like something I've created in my mind.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Like, but I feel like people, get it. Weren't like Angelina and Billy Bob like making out in the back
in
of
a limo?
Yeah.
But sometimes, like Brendan has gotten picked up in what he's called limos before, but it's really a town car.
Oh. So they're not stretch.
It's not a stretch limo, but there is something that's classified as a limo.
Yeah.
But it's just not a stretch limo. Because when I hear the word limo, I think of like the long ass.
I do too. I don't think of anything else. But I guess limos can just be considered a town car as well.
Right.
But yeah, I think of stretch limo for sure.
With the little partition.
I went to Giant Stadium in a stretch limo to see Depeche Mode.
Wait, Desi, when?
I don't know, like the 90s.
That is so funny.
Because I was like young. It was like, ooh, let's get a limo. That's like the only thing I can think of. And that was the only time I've ever been in one. Because I don't even fucking care about limos. Like,
no.
It's like, who cares?
That's something.
But I think that's something like teenagers.
It's like a prom thing.
Yeah. I don't know that it's. At some point, I think it also became not rich.
It's gauche.
Yeah, it's gauche. So maybe that's another thing.
And then there was like the people who would get stretch Hummers.
Oh yeah, that was a thing.
Those are so
ugly. I think
ugly.
Other cars became more, because I'm sure like at some point it was even like, I took a Prius to the Oscars. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
Being environmental became more of the sort of thing people wanted to look like. They were taking an electric car.
Oh yeah,
to the limos.
I took a ride share to the Oscars.
Exactly.
I took a fucking Lyft. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, me too. When we get nominated.
If Brendan ever gets invited to the Oscars again, we're going to take a Lyft.
We're going to take we'll take a Lyft, but like the Lyft share.
Yeah, we're going to take the pool. We're going to do the Lyft pool.
Okay. We're just part of the people.
That's right. We're just going, just happen to be going to the Oscars. So Bill Mensur, he's rented this limo. Without the driver. Again, highly unusual. Then he gathered his fellow goons and met back at his apartment in the valley to discuss their plans for that evening. At Bill's apartment was the Nazi bodyguard guy, 23-year-old Alex Marty. There was a guy there named Carl Plazak. There was a younger guy named Roger Corbin. And a guy named Bob Lowe.
I'm sorry. You don't know
no relation to Rob Lowe.
Bob Lowe.
This is budget Rob Lowe.
He's Bob. Got a pot belly and a receding hairline. I'm sorry.
That's going to suck because this is 83. Rob is like, was he in The Outsiders?
I mean, he must have just been.
Was he in The Outsiders?
I don't think he was in The Outsiders.
Okay, but he was like just becoming a star.
He was in like St. Elmo's Fire or something.
Yeah, and I think that was a little later, but
I don't remember what his early movies were. Was he a teen?
I need to look this up. Hold on, we'll be right back. I was right. Rob Lowe played Soda Pop Curtis in Francis Ford Coppola's The Outsiders in 1983. So Rob Lowe was breaking out.
And Bob Lowe...
Bob Lowe is hanging out with the dregs of society in the valley. Probably not hot.
No.
Oh, to be Bob Lowe.
It's funny how Bob is not hot, but Rob could be hot.
okay. So they're all meeting in the valley to discuss what they're going to do. And Bob Lowe was going to play the part of the limo chauffeur.
Okay.
They were going to kidnap and murder Roy Raden.
Ooh.
Bill Mentzer handed the men their payment for the job, $500 cash each. Bill's payment had already been made by Lainey, and that was a $4,000 shopping spree. Do you think he got the better deal?
No.
You'd rather have 500 cash?
Oh, wait, 500 cash? No, I want the shopping spree.
Me too.
I'm sorry. I thought you said 5,000.
No.
I was like, why would you take a shopping spree over cash?
That night, just after 8 p.m., DeMond and his secretary, Amelia, sat parked half a block away from the Regency Hotel in Hollywood with their sights on the front entrance of the hotel. So they were like within sight of it. They're staking out the place.
I can't believe this plan.
Dude, it's about to get worse.
Okay.
Lainey arrived in a black Cadillac limo 40 minutes later and went inside the hotel to meet Roy. Inside Roy and Jonathan's hotel room, Roy was just finishing getting ready. He snorted a line of coke in his bedroom. Jonathan asked if he could drive them to dinner at La Scala, but Lainey said no, she had rented a limo. Lainey then asked Jonathan if he actually could go pick up some coke that she had in her car, which was parked over at her apartment in Beverly Hills, because she had an apartment in Beverly Hills and a house in Sherman Oaks. Jonathan was like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I'm staying right here. Jonathan's instincts were right, as two of Lainey's goons, Plazak and Corbin, were waiting for him outside of Lainey's apartment. Roy and Lainey departed the hotel, and Bob Lowe was waiting for them out front, dressed as the chauffeur.
I'm sorry. I can't get over Bob Lowe.
I need to find a picture of him.
Yeah.
To post. DeMond, who was watching the whole time, started to pull his car out to follow the limo, but he got partially blocked in and had to do sort of a three-point turn.
What is this, like Beverly Hills Cop? With the bananas in the tailpipe?
Dude, it was like the worst fucking thing to happen. Like, he thought he was going to do a smooth pull out.
And also, this has happened in so many movies where they get blocked by like a delivery truck.
He got blocked by another car.
Oh my God.
So it took him way longer than anticipated to pull out.
Oh my God.
And as a result, another car pulled in front of him.
Oh my God.
And got behind the limo. And so he's like looking.
Right. Trying to see where they're going.
Trying to see where they're going. And more cars.
Of course.
Keep passing him and going in front of him. There's like eight cars in front of him at this point.
Oh my God.
And he's trying to speed up to catch this limo, to follow it to the restaurant.
I can see this scene so clearly because I've seen it in movies a million times. They're like slamming their fist on the dashboard.
Poor DeMond.
He's like, I'm an actor.
Right. Eventually he lost sight of the car. So he decided, okay, well, I'm just going to continue on to La Scala in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
Not the plan, but he's like,
that's where they're going.
He's like assuming, okay, I'm the next best thing I can do.
It is the best thing he can do, to be honest.
At that point, yes. Meanwhile, the limo carrying Roy and Lainey pulled over and Lainey got out. Bill Mentzer and Alex Marty got inside the limo with Roy.
Oh, shit.
The limo was headed north on the 5 freeway to a canyon 65 miles away from LA near the small town of Gorman. Nearly 3 hours after Roy and Lainey's departure from the Regency Hotel, Jonathan called La Scala to make sure that they had all made it there. The host said no, neither him nor his party had shown up. Jonathan then asked if DeMond Wilson was there, and he was. And Jonathan's like, I need to talk to him right now.
DeMond's just eating dinner.
By himself.
I'll get the spaghetti carbonara.
Jonathan was like, why the fuck didn't you call me? Why have you been at La Scala for 2.5 hours
and
they haven't showed up? What have you even been doing there? And DeMond's like, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
How would he know?
But I do think that is absurd. that he waited at this restaurant for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Without calling anyone. I wonder if he did eat, though. I would hope he did.
You gotta.
They probably would have kicked him out if he didn't order.
You wouldn't be there for that long without eating, would you?
He was probably like, well, I might as well.
Yeah, I'm sitting here doing nothing. I'm sure they'll be here in a minute.
And Jonathan was like, where the fuck is Roy? And Damon's like, I have no idea. I've been at La Scala.
And would Damon have, I mean, but that wasn't in the plan to call him if something happened, right? I mean.
No, I think Jonathan was just like common sense.
Right, right.
What have you been doing sitting on your ass? Clearly, we made this plan for a reason. Panicking, Jonathan called Anna Montenegro, but he couldn't get a hold of her. He then called Lainey's house in Sherman Oaks, but no one picked up. He didn't know that earlier that evening, Lainey had arranged for her nanny, Miriam, and her son, Dax, to get on a plane to Miami.
Ooh.
So Jonathan was like, why isn't the housekeeper, the nanny, even picking up? By this time, Lainey was in Westwood with her friend, Saul Besharat, at his house. Jonathan finally got a hold of Anna Montenegro, who rushed over to the Regency. She was super freaked out when the situation was explained to her. They called Lainey again, and Lainey ended up calling back. Jonathan demanded to know where Roy was. She said that on the way to the restaurant, they got into a fight, and she demanded to be let out of the car. She said that they dropped him off on Sunset near Tower Records. Jonathan wasn't buying it. Lainey then changed her story again, saying that the limo actually dropped her off in Westwood and Roy was still in the car.
Hmm.
The next day, on Saturday the 14th, Lainey and her hired goons took a private jet out of LA and flew to Miami. From there, the goons would resume their search for Tally Rogers, who was still at large, but they had information that he might be in St. Thomas. They initially planned to have Bob Lowe fly out to the island with a woman so they could pose as tourists while they looked for Tally Rogers. But Bob couldn't find a woman who wanted to go to St. Thomas with him.
So we know he was not hot.
Yeah.
Rob, however, could find numerous women who would go to St. Thomas
with him. Oh, God. Jonathan and Anna went to the cops in West Hollywood and told them that their friend was missing. But the cops told them that they couldn't do anything until 72 hours had passed. And they're like, no, you don't understand. Our friend, we think he's been kidnapped.
Yeah.
They're like, gotta wait 72 hours.
I wonder why that rule exists. It seems so infuriating. Like, hasn't it fucked up enough times that we alter it in some way, especially if they're involved with like drug dealers or something like something where it's dangerous possibly.
Right.
Cause it's crazy.
Always, I mean, if you listen to a lot of true crime podcasts or you read a lot of true crime, that's like a trope.
Right.
You always,
you can't report someone missing until it's too late to collect evidence.
Right. Jonathan had to take matters into his own hands, so he hired private detective John O'Grady. O'Grady was known as Hollywood's number one private eye. By this time, Roy's friends and family in New York were aware of the situation. Roy's mother, Renee, hired a psychic to aid in the search. O'Grady, the PI, called Robert Evans at his house in Beverly Hills. He asked him why Lainey Jacobs had called him at 3 a.m. on the night of Roy's disappearance. Evans was like, I don't know. She just did. Now, Robert Evans genuinely did not know. I don't think he knew. I think.
Oh, of course.
Lainey was trying to create an alibi.
Right.
She had said to one of her goons that she would be making phone calls
to kind of establish.
To establish that she was in a specific location. Jonathan got a hold of Lainey again that Monday, but she denied knowing where Roy was. This was bad. Mickey DeVinco and a former cop from Cleveland who was friends with Roy both flew out to Los Angeles to stay with Jonathan at the Regency to try and help him. They went through Roy's papers and documents and handed them over to O'Grady. By the 21st of May, the newspapers reported on Roy Radin's disappearance. Following the reports in the paper, one of Lainey's lawyers flew in from Miami to confront O'Grady at his office. He said that his client would not be speaking to the police and that she had gotten out of the car before Roy did. So she's like, I don't know where he is.
Right.
But O'Grady pushed back, saying that Lainey had originally told Jonathan that Roy had gotten out at Tower Records before Lainey. So obviously she was lying about something. Why'd she tell him two different things?
Yeah.
Around this time, Mark Fogle, who, if you don't remember, is the guy who owned the luxury car dealership that Lainey rented from, he was freaking out that the limo that was returned was suspiciously cleaned.
Oh.
And also, not only was it suspiciously clean, but the seats had been replaced.
So super suspicious.
That's too clean.
Yeah.
Oh, so if you don't remember, Mark Fogle was busted selling drugs to a CI in 1980, and he was now working with the cops, reluctantly.
Oh, okay.
So he hit up the detective he was working with, Fred McKnight, and he told him he thought this guy, Roy Radin, had been murdered. The cops at the department had only been investigating a missing persons case at this point, but Mark insisted, no, this is a murder case. It wasn't until June 10th that a grim discovery was made 65 miles north of Los Angeles in a canyon near that small town in Gorman. Glenn Fisher, he owned a company called Fisher Apiaries. He was a beekeeper, and he was in the area looking for a place to drop off his hives. It was a sweltering day already when Glenn pulled into the site with the park ranger named Lynn. The first thing he noticed upon stepping out of the car was a pile of shell casings. The ranger told him it was probably from people who came there for target practice. But as he walked further, he smelled something disgusting. That's when he noticed a hand sticking out from behind a bush. When he got closer, he found the badly decomposed body of Roy Radin. Roy, who was still dressed in the same blue three-piece suit that he had when he left the Regency Hotel nearly a month earlier, was barely recognizable.
Ooh.
Half of his face had been blown off.
Shit.
And he was badly decomposed.
I mean, yeah, hot month.
For a month.
Yeah.
This is in a canyon in Southern California.
Oof.
May and June.
Yeah.
It's not a good sight.
Mm-mm.
Glenn, who was horrified, immediately contacted the police, and by that afternoon, cops from the sheriff's department, as well as two Los Angeles homicide detectives, were there. Several feet away from the body, detectives discovered a jawbone with teeth still attached. It was as if a bomb had gone off in his mouth. And that's exactly what did happen. There were indications of a struggle. Multiple bullets from a .22 caliber pistol had been fired into Roy Radin. The cause of death was determined to be a gunshot wound to the head. But after he was dead, the killers stuck dynamite in his mouth in an attempt to obscure his identity.
Oh, shit.
They wanted to, like, blow him apart.
Right.
But it clearly wasn't enough, as police were able to definitively identify him through dental records.
Oof, that's gruesome.
Yeah. Roy was buried in Southampton, and his longtime friend, Red Buttons, who was a comic, he...
Sorry.
Do you know Red Buttons?
I do know him. Well, but that's just...
I know. He gave the eulogy.
That's crazy.
I know. After the discovery of the body, Lainey was furious. Roy was not supposed to be discovered. This was supposed to forever be, he's missing.
Yeah.
She had instructed her guys, you dispose of that body so there's no evidence. And they're like, stick some dynamite in his mouth.
Well, that's what you get when you pay people $500 each, to be honest.
That
seems really low.
You really get what you pay for.
Also, her plan to me is dumb to begin with, because I wouldn't even involve myself with the missing person that night where I had to be like, I got out of the car. Like, why would you even involve yourself in anything they were doing that night is crazy to me. Like,
I'm really unsure of her logic here. If she thought she wanted to make it seem maybe like they were on better terms, like they were having a meeting together, but it still seems so dumb to me.
Well, because the people who are last seen with them are always sort of a part of the investigation in a major way.
No matter what. Up top.
And I guess if she thought he'd never be found, it wouldn't matter, but it still seems like a crazy plan to me.
Yeah, it's a really interesting choice that she made there. So Lainey panicked. She left L.A. and spent the rest of the summer in Palm Springs with Bill Mentzer, who she was also fucking.
Yeah.
Robert Evans stopped answering her calls. By this time, Evans was in fear of his own life. When Lainey and Bill left the house they rented, the owner made a startling discovery. Lainey had left behind her answering machine. Out of curiosity, the homeowner was like,
wait, how do you have your answering machine with you? Wait, she took it or she brought it to Palm Springs?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
She brought her, I mean, they were renting this house.
So they rented a house. She brought her answering machine and then she forgot it when they yes. left. And the homeowner was like, okay, let's listen to their messages. Look,
to be fair, it would be very hard not to press that button, especially when two total weirdos have been staying at your house.
Yeah, I guess if they were weirdos, then maybe I'd be curious.
You'd be a little curious.
I honestly don't know if I would play their answering machine because I don't think it would be that interesting. Like, what are the chances it'd be anything juicy?
Well, it was something juicy.
I bet you it was.
There was a very threatening voicemail on that answering machine. It said, I know you're there. You're hanging up on me. I know you're there because my people saw you arriving at the airport. Daddy will have to send to you and you're not going to like it.
Daddy?
Who's daddy?
That's such a sinister, hot message. I like that that's what he played and that was the first one. And then you got to listen to all of them for sure. If that's the first one hear.
Well, yeah. If you, because if most of the, if the first set of messages are just like, hi, honey.
Yeah.
Then you feel like an asshole.
And you're like,
I'm going to delete these.
If you hear something juicy up top, then you're sitting down. You're getting some snacks.
You're getting a cork board with string.
Yeah.
And you're trying to put the pieces together
Absolutely.
Yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I figured that would be a great place to stop.
Yeah.
Next week. This is a story that never ends. But do you see how there's so much stuff I can't leave out?
Yeah.
Because next week we got a doozy of a finale. We are going to end this. This will be over next week. We're going to talk the arrests and trial. We're going to talk the Son of Sam conspiracies and the aftermath.
And the making of the movie, right?
Yeah, and a little bit of the making of the movie.
Yeah.
So I've never seen the movie. Have you?
No. Is it with Richard Gere?
Yeah.
No, because I think it's famously a bad movie, right?
It's famously a terrible movie.
Yeah, I have not seen it.
I have no interest
in seeing
it.
But I know a little bit about what it is. But yeah, it bombed. Did Coppola direct it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
So look forward to that next week.
We will.
We'll see you on Friday.
Time for the after show.
Time for the after show now. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.